So you know we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios, right? Whether you want to buy a home or refinance your current home, Rocket can. All right, so we're into hour number three. We are no longer on our simulcast, but I am still here on radio. 1-800-636-8686. What I did say was I did not do a good job of balancing out the number of social media beefs and email beefs versus caller beefs. That's on me. That's not on you. So if you want to stay on hold and share your beef and turn that beef into an actual take, you could do that too. And because I normally don't take very many telephone calls in the program, that could actually work. So I might carry this over. What I still have ahead this hour is a conversation with a senior writer for SI, Chris Herring. I've got John Morosi coming up a little bit later on this hour. I've got an episode of the Jim Rohn podcast, Ep 194, with NFLer Mitchell Schwartz. Kind of curious about where he is in his comeback and his rehab. He had back surgery in February, and I know that he had been getting close, according to reports. If he is ready or near ready, there are definitely some teams that could use some help on their offensive line. So we'll touch base with him, get his thoughts. Also, he is a tweeting maniac during NFL games. He's a high-volume guy, so he'll have some thoughts. You've got a Thursday night matchup. Baker Mayfield cannot go. He's got a torn labrum on his non-throwing shoulder, and he's also got some fraying in there too. So Case Keenum is going to get that call. I'm going to try and get to that as well. 1-800-636-8686. So let's see. You know, why not? Let's go to the phones. Let's go to St. Louis. Richard in St. Louis. Good to have you on. Richard, what's up?
Jim, I have an absolute beef with that four-letter network. How dare you finally put something on with Pinky and Eli that I will actually watch, but then you don't dare, once it works, get off your ass and scratch a checkbook to them guys. Come on, put something on we want to hear. Also, Jim, just as a side note, your clowns behind the glass need to be absolutely ready with the drops and quit giving you crappy Twitter and emails so that you have to stumble and stammer around and waste our time. Thank you, Jim. I'm out.
Oh, I'm wasting your time. You make that call and you say, I'm wasting your time. That's Rich. Rich. All right, so the first part of his... Sorry, I'm wasting your time, bro. Maybe you should spend it doing something else. That was great. Hey, listen, you can accuse me of a lot of things, but I don't think stammering around and wasting your time is one of those things. Maybe reading your horrible takes is a waste of time. But I'm not out here stammering around wasting your time because of the clowns behind the other side of the glass who are bringing me the wrong things. Bro, you want to talk about stammering around, Richard? You're all over the freaking map. But why don't we stick with your first take where you said, I got a beef with that four-letter network for giving us Pinky and Eli and finally something we like, and then them not paying them and not bringing them back. Yeah, I don't really know what the thinking was. I don't know if they just had a deal with a certain amount of episodes. I don't know if it was just kind of a trial basis. I don't know if, quote, Pinky and Eli only wanted to do a certain amount of eps. I do agree with you. They make it better. It's a really good product. You know, and I'm not here to crack on the actual product and the actual play-by-play team. I mean, it's a given that they've had some trouble there because they keep making changes. But the Mannings, although I did not have high hopes or high expectations, man, they're good. They are really good. And they do make it better. Richard, I wish I could say the same thing for you. 1-800-636-8686. This is the risk I run by carrying the beef segment over one more segment. Let's try it again. Let's go to Roseville. That's here in California. Darren. Good to have you, Darren. What's up?
Hey, Jim. I'm not going to call him beef about your performance because, as usual, it's always very excellent. However, I am going to beef about my local affiliate constantly selling their ad space to radio announcer guy coming on the radio and selling ED and male performance enhancement services constantly. Clean it up, radio guy. I got kids in the car. If I have to explain away what Peyronie's disease is again to my kids, I'm going to go sideways.
My man, Darren, thank you very much, bro. Again, I guess, see, when we have this segment and we know where the segment is and what it is, then it's kind of understandable if somebody's going to call up and complain about ED or VD or anything like that. However, if we're outside of our window, then maybe some of the suits might say, I don't know, Rome, do you think that's such a good idea? My response to a suit would be, well, I've had worse ideas. I like that. Like male enhancement. Long before that was a thing, somebody tried to make that a thing on this show. And a sponsor came to us and said, and this is when there were not very many shows or very many national voices. So this couple came to us and they said, we have a product. It's a male enhancement product and we want Jim Rome to be our spokesperson. And Jim Rome said, no. And they said, well, we'd like to talk about it. And then Jim Rome said, no. And they said, well, listen, we have this amount of money. And then Jim Rome said, I don't care if you have $1 million. I'm not getting on the air and saying that. Now, if those same people were to come to me today, I might have that conversation. Even though, obviously, I would not be a spokesperson who used that product. Anyway, now we're just being juvenile. Yeah. There's no amount of money back in the day, or I would have been like. But then again, I was just young and brash. And they're like, yeah, well, maybe you do. And I'm like, well, maybe I don't. And they're like, well, maybe Benjamin Franklin says you do. And I say, well, maybe James Rome says I don't. And then maybe I say, why are we doing this? And then I say, what happened to my show? I better get back on the path. Give me back my— maybe I should be talking about the Lakers. Hey, yo, fellas. Smart guys on the other side of the glass. Are there any calls worth taking? Or should I go back to doing the show? We're going back to the show. All right, that was a bad idea. I thought that maybe it would carry over. I thought that I was being inequitable in that I didn't give the callers a fair shake. And then I gave them their fair shake, and this is what they gave me. ED, VD, and me stammering around, wasting your time. We will run the beef back a week from today.
Run his ass down.
All right, so we're going to talk some basketball with Chris Herring, some baseball with John Morosi, some football with Mitchell Schwartz a little bit later on, and I do need an ATP. That's something you might look for, fellas, because we have back-to-back guests coming up. So the Ask the Pros is going to come up shortly. ATP. I'll tell you what, depending on what state you're in, if you're in the right state and you can use WinBet, you can get down. If you're not, you might be having trouble finding action on the Dodger game because the Braves are going with a bullpen game, which I think is really interesting. Meantime, the Red Sox and Astros are up right now. Just something to think about. I just want to just kind of broach the subject about the Lakers. So you hope the entire NBA enjoyed the last couple of seasons in the sense that everybody got in line to punch Golden State in the face, right? They were banged up. They were pieced together. Golden State had run the league for a long time. So once they fell upon hard times because they were so busted up, everybody got in line to give them the hands. Hope you enjoyed that. And how could you not? I mean, that was their way of paying Golden State back for handing everybody's asses to them on the nightly 4 years during one of the most dynastic runs you're ever going to see in the association. Of course there was payback. And I hope you all enjoyed that time because we saw last night that Golden State was going to let everybody know effectively that while they may not be all the way back yet, those days of people getting in line to punch them in the face are officially over. Those days are all over. Now, make no mistake about it. Golden State's still banged up. Klay Thompson and the second overall pick in last year's draft, James Wiseman, still in streets. However, the roster that Bob Myers and Steve Kerr and his fellas put together has them in position to take those punches, but smile, wipe the blood off, and punch back while shorthanded. We saw that last night at Staples. We saw what they did to the team that's supposed to be favored to win the West, the LA Lakers. In a game that was hyped by everybody as the coming out party of the new Big Three, Golden State withstood some early offensive struggles, they made some adjustments, and then they showed the Lakers the blueprint on how team ball is supposed to be played. And I'm not joking either. This Golden State team is different. How do I know? How do I know they gave it to the Lakers when their superstar Steph Curry played like trash?
Hey, Jim Rome.
And I'm not here to crack on Steph. Those were actually Steph's words, not mine.
We weathered the storm tonight. Obviously, I played like trash, shot the ball terribly. But, you know, if we can win a game like that where we created some good shots and just stuck with it defensively, I guess a pretty good team and get a win like that, that's a good omen for us.
He nailed it. He's right. Steph is so right. I mean, that's my point. Steph did shoot like trash. For Steph, well, for anybody, Steph was 5 of 21. Over the past two seasons, if Steph Curry plays like trash in the way he says, Golden State gets waxed and waxed badly. But now he can have a game like that, and they've got enough depth and they've got enough skill that they can beat a quality team. And with Steph on the bench to start the fourth, Golden State did not fold. They started that quarter by going on an 18-6 run to put them back in control. And when Steph did come back to finish the game, they looked relaxed. And then they found the Lakers' collective trachea.
Back to Bielitsa, fakes, goes out to the wing to Wiggins for a three. Got it! Timeout, Los Angeles.
How about that movement, Tim? The Lakers had no idea where that ball was going to end up.
Bielitsa faking a pass midair.
Man, no joke. They didn't know. They had no idea. Golden State had the Lakers on skates. Ball movement, Laker fan. Golden State, 123. LA, 114. Warriors, 1-0. Lakers, big three, 0-1. And yes, I did not begin that take by talking about the Lakers. And I know I'm supposed to do that. Hell, I'm supposed to begin the show by talking about the Lakers. Like, you wonder, am I even doing my job if I don't come out here and start vomiting diarrhea about the Lakers and selling what
diarrhea?
A massive overreaction there must be. Like, it doesn't work. The pieces don't fit. Look at Russ. I told you. I knew it. You know, all that melodramatic BS about the big three not working. It's one game. It's only one game. Yes, Russ looked awkward playing with so many dudes who want as many minutes and shots and to dominate the ball the way he does. Yes, it is an interesting dynamic. No, I don't know with certainty that it's going to work. Yes, vintage Russ has never been option three on a team. Yes, 8 points on 4 of 13 shooting and a team worst minus 23 was about the worst debut that guy could have made. Yes, I don't remember him looking or playing worse. And he's had some rough nights. I mean, that was a nightmare. That literally could not have gone any worse for him and they than it did. But it's only one game. It's only one game. It's a process. And I've got even more news for you. Not only is it only one game and a process, it's not even the thing that the Lakers have to worry about this year. There are more important things to worry about than whether or not that particular piece fits that puzzle. There really are. Namely, whether or not they can count on old street clothes. And that's not me. My man Chuck, Charles Barkley, was already going in on AD last night, Alvy.
I've looked at this Laker team. It's going to come down to one thing. Street clothes. If street clothes can stay out of street
Anthony,
clothes.
Anthony Davis, you're
listen,
talking
and
about.
I'm just saying this. LeBron's older. Westbrook is older. All them geezers on the bench. If Anthony Davis is the best player or one of the top five players in the NBA, the Lakers are going to be legit.
That took Chuck maybe 5 seconds before he went in. And you know what? He's right. Like, there's that question, is LeBron still LeBron? Can they count on LeBron? Well, based on what I saw last night, LeBron is still LeBron. How he's still LeBron at that age, I have no idea. How he can still do what he does with that kind of mileage on him, I have no idea. But he is. I wouldn't worry about that. Chuck is right. Can they count on street clothes? Is he going to be out there? Because you've got LeBron, who's older. You've got Russ, who's older. And as Chuck points out, they've got, quote, all those old geezers on the bench. So they need AD to be in Laker gear and not in street clothes. So Russ was terrible. But I wouldn't worry about that. Not yet, anyway. It's only one game. And Chuck is still the best. Never have to worry about Chuck. When we come back,
geezers on the bench.
All them geezers on the bench. Old geezers on the bench. Chris Herring coming up next. So I mentioned WinBet, right? Whether it's after a hard day of work, or maybe you're kicking back and relaxing on the weekend, we all love to hang out and watch live sports. It doesn't matter what sport you're watching. It's always more fun to have a little action. This is why I recommend downloading the WinBet app. Whether you're a recreational player or a serious handicapper, WinBet is your ticket to every exciting wager. From straight bets to parlays, teasers, any exotic proposition wager that you can dream up. And right now I've got my eye on a critical Sunday night matchup. Indy and San Francisco, week 7. The app is easy to use. Everybody knows that Wynn is one of the biggest and best brands in the gaming industry. Get off the sideline, join in on the action, download the WinBet app on Google Play or from the Apple Store today. Get yourself in the game. Win with WinBet. The offer is subject to change. Terms and conditions at winbet.com. You do have to be 21 or older and present in the state where playthrough WinBet is available. If you or somebody you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. Going through hour number 3. I'm Jim Rome. I'm live. I'm in Southern California. Right now we are joined by a senior writer at Sports Illustrated, co-host of Open Floor, SI's NBA show, also a member and an adjunct faculty member at Northwestern. He's got a brand new book out, Blood on the Hardwood, The Flagrant History of the 1990s New York Knicks. It is available for pre-order. In fact, Chris Herring is my guest. Chris, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm great, Jim. How are you?
Good, good. Good to visit with you. Let me start right here. The NBA season's underway, and we could have a whole conversation about the games from last night alone, Chris. But Ben Simmons has done a pretty amazing job of being the story of the league over the past week. I'm curious, what was your reaction when you heard he got thrown out of practice for refusing to participate in a defensive drill and then generally his act overall? What do you think when you see this?
I was telling people before, I was surprised that it wasn't an offensive drill that he decided to opt out of. That was
Ooh,
my first
ouch.
Thought.
Right.
The second thought, though, was that, man, this, you know, for how ugly this looks, and obviously it's ugly and it's beyond repair at this point, it shows he clearly never wanted to come back. It was just about how much money he was losing through the fines and everything like that. And so, you know, maybe this is one way to get out of it, but my goodness, you know, as far as his value around the league, I mean, it could become a really, really – it already is an ugly game of chicken, but if you're the Sixers and you were just going to hold out for what you wanted, you're probably more likely to do that now just because who wants somebody that's kind of behaving that way? And Simmons must know that. Maybe he's just trying to torpedo everything on the way out, but it may be a while. And so, you know, it may be one of those situations where everybody needs to grab a Snickers.
See, Chris, I was talking about this. It seems to me like I could see why Anthony Davis wanted out of his situation. I could see why James Harden wanted out of his situation. You know, right or wrong, I could see where they want to be in different situations. Do you have a sense as to why Simmons wants out of Philly?
Yeah, I was talking to someone about that, too. I mean, this was a number one seed that got upset in the second round, has an MVP candidate where you're not asked to be the lead scorer for this team. You have a role where you can settle in and be, you know, maybe a defensive player of the year at some point. And you don't even have to handle the ball all the time. You're not asked to shoot much. And you have a max deal for several more years. So it's pretty
teachy? I mean, does he have feelings about what Doc Rivers said? And frankly, you know, Doc did say something that you're not used to hearing coaches speak that candidly in the aftermath of a really horrible loss, where he's straight up said, I don't know if we win this and win a championship with him as our point guard. That is hard to hear. Embiid also had comments that were pretty suggestive of how hurtful that play was and kind of how it hurt their chances of winning that series. But again, I mean, you're making a lot of money in a big market, and people can talk about how horrible the Philly fans are. They've got their moments, certainly. But I think, if anything, they are rooting. They were rooting for Ben Simmons and encouraging him just to shoot. I mean, the guy seems really afraid to fail. So I'm not sure where you go, where at some point, if he goes to a smaller place where the expectations are lower, but he ends up being even more of a face of what they're doing, I don't know that that ultimately makes it easier for him. And I don't know what the answer is or which side is up for him at this point.
Chris Herring is joining us. He's a senior writer at Sports Illustrated. All right, so before Simmons grabbed that spotlight, Kyrie Irving and the Nets were occupying that spot for a while. What do you make of this Nets team without Kyrie?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I think that they're still capable of winning the East and maybe winning the whole thing without him, because the rest of that roster is a lot better than it was last year as far as the depth on it. You got to see some of that last night. I mean, it was a team that looked like they clearly need some time to play together, including the bench guys that are going to be a big part of it. Whether they're as able to withstand a serious injury to Kevin Durant or James Harden that would keep them out for 20 games, maybe not. You know, as if you had three people and the ability to withstand that. But I don't think any of this really matters for the regular season. It's kind of more, can they hit a rhythm and can they really develop the things they need to by the end of the season? And by the way, as we talk about Simmons and where he ends up, if Kyrie's not going to play and he's just not going to get vaccinated, you know, is he going to sit out a whole season? Would he do that? And if he's not and he wants to play but just isn't going to get the shot and play in Brooklyn, do they get something for him? Even if it's not a third star, if it's even more depth, if it is someone that is kind of, you know, in between just a role player and someone that is a superstar, they could make use of that as well, and it kind of bolsters them still. So I'm not concerned about them. I did kind of think that Milwaukee would be better early on in the season, if not later in the season, just because they have all the cohesion that Brooklyn really does not yet.
Chris Herring is joining us. All right, speaking of Milwaukee, I thought you made a really interesting point on the Crossover podcast when you said that you didn't think that Giannis could win the MVP again this season. So let me ask you, has he, the point being though, has he reached a point of Jordan, LeBron excellence where there's almost Giannis MVP fatigue? Is that what we're talking about?
I think possibly. I will say this. A lot of times, like, I think LeBron potentially would have won more and would have won the one right after he went to Miami had people not been so up in arms about the way he left for Miami. And so I think sometimes, you know, my point may be accurate, may be wrong as far as the fatigue. I mean, he's coming off a title. He's 26, and so he still has room to get better with the jumper and with other things as well. But I also think he's really well-liked in a way that a lot of people are not by the time that they get to this stage. As far as just like being universally loved, it's really hard to find people to just say negative things about Giannis in terms of, you know, he hasn't had a decision moment, and I don't know that he ever will. And so that part of it is worth keeping in mind too. But I think the point that some of my colleagues made on that podcast that you're speaking about is that it's just harder for me. A lot of times what I look at when I'm looking at an MVP vote or something like that is this kind of standard for what they've done already, or are they pushing new boundaries? And with Jokic, that was what he was doing. With Giannis in his second year that he won the MVP, he had done that. With Steph in his second year, where he was unanimous, it was the same sort of thing where he went above and beyond even what he'd done the first time he won it. I think it gets harder for Giannis to keep doing that unless he develops a jumper. But it's possible, and it's very possible that his team ends up with the best record, which also you would think gives him a little bit of a leg up in terms of trying to do it. But I do think once you start getting in that rarefied air of three awards, four awards that you've won, it gets a little bit harder just because I think at that point you're basically saying this guy is one of the greatest to ever play, and he is, but is he like Jordan-level greatest to ever play, or is he somewhere in between there? And I think some people will probably have that question and maybe hold off and vote for him.
I think that's a very interesting conversation. Chris Herring joining us. All right, one more thing really quickly. When you look at the Lakers, they opened up their season last night with that loss to Golden State. They were up 2-1 on Phoenix in the postseason before it all fell apart. In your opinion, did they really need to blow it all up and radically reshape the roster the way that they did?
I mean, it's months later, and I'm still stunned that they did that. Not just that they blew it up, but that you blew it up to bring Russell Westbrook in. And I know it's just game one. And there are people that are more nerd-oriented like me that are going to look at the box score and also watch the game and notice the nuances of the game as well. But notice right away that, you know, Russ is not necessarily the things that you need for that team as a third star. You normally think of third stars, Klay Thompson with Durant and Steph and you know, people like that, Ray Allen with Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, guys that kill you if you can't get out to them as a defender to stop them from shooting because you leave them wide open. Russ is not a good shooter. You would rather him be wide open. And he's not someone that's going to cut, and he's not someone that's going to screen, and he's a kind of not a defender that you want to have out there when Steph is out there because he's not going to stay with Steph. And so he was a minus 23 last night in a game that was relatively close. Nobody else had anything near that as far as the plus-minus. So that's the sort of thing I worry about. It's early. I'm sure they'll figure it out, but I would have kept the roster more similar and just banked on those guys being healthier this year then blow it up for that. But they can prove me wrong. Who knows? It's early.
So, Chris, really quickly, as a follow-up, what do you think, all that said, that makes sense to me, what you said, what do you think that LeBron was thinking? Like, what kind of conversations was LeBron having in the mansion when he had Russ over and said, this would work, this would work, this is why you should join us? What was his pitch?
You know, I think it's similar to what we were saying a moment ago about Brooklyn. Is if you have AD go down, or even if LeBron goes down again, at least you have a third guy that can kind of step in and take some of the brunt off everybody else. And so there's that part of it. But also, you know, God bless LeBron, but I also think star players kind of have blind spots when it comes to the sorts of things that we're talking about what really makes a championship team. He's great. He's a great player. But does he contribute to winning in the same way that, like, Chris Paul does? We had those guys traded straight up, and you kind of saw that right away with Washington in that situation and Oklahoma City and Houston and that whole thing. And Oklahoma City was in the playoffs at a time where no one expected that. And, you know, quite frankly, I'm not sure how much Russ helped in some situations with regards to Houston when he wasn't really going to the basket and being aggressive. So we've seen that play out before. It doesn't mean they can't win. I just think there are other guys that would do that more efficiently. And I think third guys that would do that more efficiently. I think Russ, he would probably help the most off the bench. That's kind of a hot take. But I don't think that he's got too big of an ego to do that. And I think that Frank Vogel probably would not consider it, certainly not this early, but ever. And I don't think LeBron would either. But I think that he would be better suited there than, you know, taking the ball out of LeBron's hand. That's what I don't quite understand. You want LeBron to have the ball, and Russ needs the ball too. He's not going to help you as much as a jump shooter.
He is a senior writer at Sports Illustrated, co-host of Open Floor, SI's NBA show. And he's got a book that is now available for pre-order, Blood on the Hardwood, The Flagrant History of the 1990 New York Knicks. Chris Herring, my guest. Chris, really appreciate it. Great job, as always. Always look forward to having you on the show, Chris. Thanks so much.
Always love being on. Thanks so much, Jim.
Have a great day, my man. Chris Herring. All right, so, again, I think we all agree it's only one game. Now, it is only one game and a really poor preseason, but still just one regular season game. Give them some time. Maybe it works out. Or maybe it doesn't. Maybe the fit is not right. Maybe there was no need to blow it up completely. All right, when we come back, John Morosi joins us. Wild day here in LA yesterday. The Dodgers, a few outs from falling behind 3-0. No way they come back from that. And then Cody Bellinger changed everything with one swing. When you call a Dell Technologies advisor, they are focused on you, ready to give advice on everything from Windows laptops to the cloud to keep your small business ready for what's next. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. A start to a simpler experience with Windows 11 Pro. Here is your sport. I think that I'm just going to end this show the way I started the program, by talking some baseball. Welcome back. I am Jim Rome. I'm joined right now by an MLB Network insider, an NHL Network insider. You can watch John across MLB Network's programming, including MLB Tonight, which is airing live before and after every single game, including on site at the World Series. He is John Morosi. John, good to have you back. How are you?
Jim Rome, it is always a pleasure to be with you, my friend, and I'm joining you now from Fenway Park. What a great sentence that is. I feel so lucky to be here. Beautiful day in Boston for some late afternoon baseball here in the month of October.
All right, so that's the way you set the scene. You're at Fenway. I love that. I want to get to the ALCS in a moment. But as somebody who has covered Cody Bellinger in the past, John, what did you think when you saw his home run last night for L.A.?
Jim, I thought that he, with one swing, erased all of the disappointment and difficulty of the season that preceded it. And the Dodgers now, as the reigning World Series champions, have moved to a place where, like the Yankees of the Jeter era, what they do from April to September matters a little bit, and then what happens in the most important at-bats of the year in October means everything. And with that one swing, Jim, he erased all of the criticism, all of the difficult moments he went through. That shoulder, in my view, has not really been sound all season long, but it looks sound to be able to turn around a fastball that high up in the zone for that moment at Dodger Stadium, my friend. What an electrifying time that was for the Dodgers. And now all of a sudden, that NLCS series is not quite level, but it's back to being a really intriguing seven-game set between the Dodgers and the Braves.
Extremely well said. John Morosi is joining us. John, as a quick follow, I want your thoughts on this, if you don't mind. We are talking about somebody who did struggle all season long, both with injuries and inherent struggles at the plate, but he's come through a number of times in clutch moments in the postseason. In your opinion, how do you explain the ability that some guys just have innately to deliver when it matters most, regardless of how much they have struggled prior to that moment?
You know, Jim, it's a great question, and it goes across sports. You think about how many times did we see Robert Horry hit a clutch shot in the NBA playoffs? It's that same thing where there are certain players who are often around winning and make those winning plays, and I really think it goes to the mentality. The mentality, especially in a sport like baseball. I think, Jim, in baseball it's more pronounced than any other sport because it is so mental. In basketball, in hockey, in football, for the most part, if you play really, really hard, and if you unleash an absolute torrent of passion and emotion, you will usually help your team. You cannot do that in baseball. You must, in fact, do the opposite. You must be able to slow the game down, and while, depending on what your role is, the person who is 60 feet, 6 inches away from you, if that person's mental process is speeding up, and if their anxiety level is raising up, and you can keep yours down at a modicum of that, you are probably going to have success and have that careful at-bat. We saw it even last night here at Fenway. Jason Castro, an 11-year veteran, coming back to the Astros off the bench. Now, he could have been rung up by the 2-2 pitch for sure, but he worked a very good at-bat, delivered for his team. And I look to those players. Derek Jeter's had it for a long time. Mookie Betts has had it for a long time. And even there are certain players like Kike Hernandez, who I think has really added to his experience with the Dodgers, and now we're seeing him flourish with the Boston Red Sox.
We are talking to John Morosi. He is at Fenway Park right now as we have this conversation. All right, so to that point, John, let me jump right to that. Red Sox fans would be very quick to tell you they got jammed badly on a potential third strike to Castro before everything exploded. What's your reaction when you hear that?
Well, a couple things. Number one, let's not forget, Jim, that the luck that they had on a very unique ground rule at Fenway Park against the Rays in the division series, but for a bounce, the Rays might have won Game 3, and we might be talking to you from Tropicana Field during this series because it was that close in terms of the way things played out there. So did they catch a tough break? Yes. They also benefited from a very unique ruling against the Rays, and so I do think that's part of the human element. It will continue to be part of the human element of the game unless and until we have the robot umps, quote-unquote, the automated strike zone. Laz Diaz, objectively, has not been one of the better ball and strike calling umpires in the major leagues, and there is no question, objectively,
that that had an impact on the way Game 4 unfolded.
All right, so John, last night I thought you had a couple of prophetic tweets. One, quote, who is the Red Sox closer tonight? Good question. Boston has yet to record a save in this postseason. End of tweet. Alex Cora then goes with Nathan Eovaldi, who was ultimately charged with four runs and the loss. What did you make of that decision?
I didn't love it, to be honest, especially with the game tied at that point. And also, we're seeing this with the Dodgers, too. Sometimes when you use your starter in relief, you might get a lesser version of that starter later in the series when you really need him. Let's see what happens with the Dodgers and Scherzer and the Dodgers and Urias this evening. I'm just not sure the Red Sox had to go to Eovaldi and that situation with the game tied. I wonder what their confidence level is in Ansel Robles, their confidence level in Tanner Houck. These are decisions that certainly every manager has to make, but I really wonder, it's not just necessarily the performance of that pitcher that you're putting in the game, but what it communicates about your confidence level in the guys who have had that job in the bullpen all season long. So I understand on one level, I love the aggressiveness that Alex Cora shows. He likes to have the quote-unquote spikes on. Everybody's, if you're not starting that game, you're ready in the bullpen. I just would like to see that utilized more when you have a lead, as opposed to when the game is tied. I thought that Alex Cora still had some good tie game options back in the bullpen that he could have gone to instead of Eovaldi.
We are talking to John Morosi. He's at Fenway Park. We've got a couple of more moments with him. John, I'm curious. Like, you've covered postseason baseball for quite some time right now. Where do you come out on this? Like, Boston was a few outs away from taking a 3-1 series lead. Now they're tied up at two games apiece. Atlanta was a few outs away from pretty much icing that series with a 3-0 lead. How much do those losses leave a mark?
Well, Jim, it's a great point and a great question. And I'll say this, too. You go back, and years ago, 2005, NLCS, the Albert Pujols home run in Houston forced the sixth game. You would have thought, oh, my gosh, now the series is over. St. Louis is going to come all the way back. They're going back home. Well, Roy Oswalt, complete game, and Houston wins it in six. So I really think it's dependent upon the way that your club comes out the next day. I know that there's the cliche that it's all about your starting pitcher. I don't really buy that. I think it's the quality of the way that you begin the next game. And that includes the quality of the at-bats that you're throwing out there and also the way that your starting pitcher performs early on. I think last night I noticed a discernible difference in the atmosphere at Fenway once Bregman homered in the first inning. It just put a little bit of nervousness in the minds of the Red Sox fans. It was less of a party here at Fenway. Game 3 was a party. Game 4 was, I think, for the Red Sox fans, excruciating. It was a really close ball game for 8.5 innings. And I think that the way that game began with the Bregman homer helped his teammates relax. There's no question that moments, that postseason is a series of moments, as Freddie Garcia once told me, the great pitcher for the White Sox many years ago. It's a series of moments. And the Astros owned a couple more of the moments last night. Sometimes they're on defense, Jim. And we'll see who owns those moments early here in Game 5 this evening.
All right, John. So really quickly, one note on the way out the door. The Yankees announced that they agreed to an extension with Aaron Boone. You've made the point that the problems that the Yankees faced last season were not about him. So what are the problems, and how do you expect them to address them?
It's going to be shortstop. And I think that's something where Brian Cashman has said that he's going to go out there and get a shortstop. I agree with the decision to keep Boone. I think he did a very good job of managing a lot of the crises they dealt with. I think shortstop is the key position there. And the guy that I'm going to mention, Jim, that I'm going to predict will be a Yankee on opening day, Marcus Semien, who, with all apologies to Vladimir Guerrero Jr., might have been the MVP of the Toronto Blue Jays this season.
John Morosi, MLB Network insider, NHL Network, friend of the program. And again, you can watch him across MLB Network's programming, including MLB Tonight, which is airing live before and after every game, including on-site at the World Series. And he comes to us live from Fenway Park. John, appreciate it so much. Thanks, and great to have you back.
Always love our conversations, Jim. It's a glorious day at Fenway. I'm in full baseball romantic mood right now. I just love this time of year. It's incredible.
My man. Nice job, John. Appreciate it. Full baseball romantic mood. I get that. What's not to love about the game? ATP. We do that every Wednesday. The ATP is brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Dear Jim, I just hit my 250th ride on the Peloton. Just curious, what kind of classes do you take? I lean towards the music rides and the low impact for my off day. Jason Anchorage. Nice job, Jay. 250 is a big number. What I've been doing for the last several months, actually what I've done effectively since the pandemic, I just do 60-minute rides. And they don't update those very often, so I tend to do the same ones. But I'm mostly, almost exclusively a 60-minute guy. If I want to dial back, I'll go 45. And then there are more options. So that's where I come out on that. Let's see, one more. Jim, have you been to the Eisenhower Museum in Abilene, Kansas? I'm an October 14th-er like you. The real Ike and Sugar Ike. Great museum and a tribute to a great American. Love the show. Steve from Big Red Country, Nebraska. Hey, Sugar Ike, have you? Nor have I. I have never been to the Eisenhower Museum in Abilene. I don't know, Sugar Ike. Maybe we should road trip. Dude, we would need so much sugar.
Bring it on.
Granger, for the ones who get it done. Granger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, backed by 24/7 support, free access to product specialists, and an experienced staff at over 250 local branches. Call or click Granger.com or stop on by. Like I said, Wednesday is a busy day, and we are not done yet. My thanks to Logan Wilson, Bengals linebacker. They're a big topic right now. We had Chris Herring. We had John Morosi. I'm going to have a conversation with Mitchell Schwartz for podcast episode 194 of the Jim Rome Podcast.